It's the 3rd of April, 2017, and you're listening to Monday Morning Meetings on Migration, a conversation about migration and politics at the University of Amsterdam. I'm Darshan Vigneshwaran. Now, a few weeks ago, we had Lauren Landau on the show, and he was giving us his thoughts on the recent xenophobic attacks in South Africa. A week or so later, I was looking on my Facebook feed, and I saw a response from a colleague of ours who is based at the University of Amsterdam, Michael Onyebuchi Eze, and he's going to be our guest on today's show and provide his rejoinder to what Lauren had to say, something that featured in his Facebook post, but which he's going to give us a little bit more based on Michael's extensive experience covering issues of nationalism and the transformation in South Africa. Michael's going to speak for about 5 to 7 minutes. I'm not going to ask him any questions. This is one of our rejoinders to Lauren Landau. Michael, take it away.
Thank you for this opportunity. By the way, it was a very fascinating conversation you had with Professor Lauren Landau. And I must say, I do agree with him that the protest is not a spontaneous movement. It didn't just erupt, you know. I do not think that it is a pre-planned event for political mobilization by black elites keen on creating political spaces for themselves. I think what is missing here is that contemporary South Africa is a mirror image of the apartheid state. South Africa under apartheid state was a racialist capitalist territory. Now what this means is that there's a relationship between race and capital, where one's race determines his or her access to basic resources. So transition to democracy in 1994 was only preoccupied with the decolonization of the political space. Now here means that it is just concerned with transition to the political nationalism while ignoring the economic space. The political space was decolonized, but not the economic status quo. In my view, I think the disquiet and problem lies in the failure of political elites after 1994 to transform politics from the moment of transition to practical politics. Instead, South Africa becomes a nation frozen on time, a state of permanent revolution. So we see that the TRC, for example, when it was introduced in South Africa, it succeeded partially where it concerns nation building and political reform. But then there is also, one have to understand, there's a strong relationship between political freedom and economic development. And this is what the transitional justice system failed to accommodate. The TRC completely ignored other aspects of socioeconomic or even structural justice while obsessing over political justice. One might, in fact, in focusing only on political transition, the TRC also became implicated in a different kind of injustice. First is the assumption that, you know, one said the people are free of the apartheid past. You know, give them false hope, we are free. You know, second, again, one can also adduce that it perpetuated the structures of apartheid, since economic benefits that were illegally acquired under apartheid became legitimated. Maintaining continuity between apartheid economics. They didn't think about decolonizing the economic space. So you see now what's happening now is for most blacks since the end of political apartheid, access to capital or quality job remains fairly restrictive. The best jobs are still in white hands. So what we see is expanded government, you know, attempting to create job opportunities for the people. In the private sector, it is a different story. With white South Africans, for example, still being in control of over 75% of Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So the riots, in my view, against black immigrants is a symptom of what happens when a state is frozen. The riot is a mimicry of anti-apartheid protests. Since the country is frozen at the moment of transition, political and economic solutions are obtained not by way of political negotiations, but by riots, just like apartheid. You know? The fact is that the victims of this violence were usually poor blacks, you know, from other African countries. The black immigrant especially is a soft target, you know, kind of a, one might call a displacement political unconscious of a frozen nation. You know, They will not attack white foreigners. They will not attack even the Chinese foreigners, only black foreigners. Those already at the bottom of the economic ladder of South Africa, those people who don't have anything already, they have no voice, so nobody cares about them. Not even their colonial states of origin. They won't even complain about them. So they attack these foreigners, not because of any ethnocentric bias, but because they constitute a threat to their access to capital or resource. Now, the Chinese or the white foreigners are no longer threats because they offer job and they see them as a source of employment and stuff like that. But the poor black foreigners, you know, are those they consider as existential threat to their access to capital. This is because, you know, as I said earlier, that among the historical leftover of apartheid is racialist capitalism, which means I am what I have. So what I have defines my subjectivity. If you are white, you have good job. If you are less, the whiter you are, the more access to labor you have. And so when they see these black people together, they're competing for the small jobs, the leftover jobs. So any threat to access of one's livelihood, you know, is a threat to someone's being. So they see them as a threat to their being. So we should take this xenophobic attack very serious. It is a response to existential strife. It's a very big response to that. Now, if you think back again a couple of months ago, you know, compare this to the whole movement of decolonization of universities in South Africa, now, which is also about making university education affordable to black majority, who for lack of economic power are still unable to afford South Africa's better universities. And you see that the protest also is also within the realm of economic decolonization. It's not political, it's also economic. So this is where you see the continuity between the non-decolonized economic space and the riot. So they attack these blacks, not necessarily because they want to kill foreigners, but because, you know, they see them as a threat to their own way of life, to their being, because I am what I have. And if my source of livelihood is threatened, then I see you as a threat to my own livelihood. So this is, I think this is just a kind of, you know, to support the claim, but also moving away that is a kind of a blanket. I think is a residue of history. It's a percolation of a nation frozen on time, a nation that is still unable to move away from moment of transition to moment of practical politics. And that is my view on that.
Thanks, Michael. I think I speak on behalf of our audience when I say, I don't want to hear just you and Lauren talking over the airwaves. I want to get you two in a room at some point in time and nut this problem out. You've been listening to Michael Onyebuchi Eze's response to Lauren Landau. Monday morning meetings on migration can be accessed at forumpodcast.com, where you'll also be able to find a sample of Michael's work. You can also get us through iTunes and now Stitcher, and can sign up for updates through Twitter and Facebook accounts. If you have suggestions about a story you'd like us to feature, or would like to post an audio rejoinder, just as Michael's done today, to something that's been said on a previous podcast, please send us an email at imes@uva.nl.